morning.
Red 10 standing by.
Red 7 standing by.
Red 3 standing by.
Red 6 standing by.
Red 9 standing by.
You're listening to the Ion Cannon Podcast.
Laugh it up, fuzzball.
Your source for entertainment reviews from a galaxy far, far away.
This is it.
Hey, laser clankers!
Welcome to the Ion Cannon Podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Steven, and I'm joined by my friends and co-hosts, Tom and William. Today, we're talking about Season 3, Episode 13 of The Bad Batch. And I don't know about you guys. I was really surprised. I never thought we were going to get a beach episode in The Bad Batch. It's not kind of unusual, but into the beach.
Wow, I did. Into the breach, Steven. Not to the beach.
What?
This deal is getting worse all the time. oh boy.
We're not going to scare
I don't even know
us,
why
Steven.
I'm laughing because that was terrible.
How dare you? I spent time on that, William.
Oh boy. Well, yes, we are back for another episode of Ion Cannon, getting ready to review the anti-penultimate episode, I think it's what it's called, of The Bad Batch. So, Tom.
Be close to.
Take it
so
away.
We are getting to. So we are going to be reviewing Season 3, Episode 13, Into the Breach, directed by Sal Ruiz and written by Brad Rao. In this episode, the Bad Bats discover a way to infiltrate Tantus. Don't you just love... This is the one episode in which I am happy Admiral Rampart... I'm sorry, Vice Admiral Rampart.
Former Vice Admiral Rampart. He's lost
former,
his position.
Well, he lost his position. He ended up... I'm not going to get there just yet, but we, you know, we start with Omega's being locked up with the other specimens in Tantus. Don't you feel sorry for her? I mean, and here's the thing. They've locked her up into the vault. They know that they need her blood. So my question for you is, why are they keeping the other ones around?
You know, that's a good question. It sounds like they all have... They need to be able to replicate this. And right now, Omega is the only one. And so I think they need her, the rest of them around, just to make sure that they can get good enough data, right? That's replicated. They need to be able to do the experiment.
Well, it's not just that as well. Like, they don't... There's this interesting nuance. I don't remember if it was at the end of the previous episode or the beginning of this one. They talk about... I think it's Hemlock when he's walking into the vault mentions that her blood is needed in order to like enable successful M count transfer, which made it almost sound like it's not just that she may have M count. She may have, you know, midichlorians in her blood, but also that there's something about her genetic makeup that enables the cloning of M count. So it might be a combination of things like her blood plus the others.
Well, and I suspect because she's a clone herself, it's likely that whatever technique was used to make her, to give her a high M count is what they're trying to kind of reverse engineer, I think. And then they're also looking at people who are naturally force sensitive. I think. I don't know. That's the way I interpreted it.
There's a part that sounds right, but there's a part of me thinking, I think Steven might be right. And boy, we're getting so geeky on this, that maybe it's because she is so special with a high M count, they need to actually have ones who are force sensitive to take that M count with her M count, combine them to make that transfer. That's why they probably need the other kids.
Yeah, I could see that. And really, this episode, we get, Omega, she doesn't really get to meet the other quote-unquote specimens, the other kids in the last episode. So in this one, it's really all about how she starts to settle in and introduces herself to the other kids and starts to maybe find a way out. And so, you know, I guess it starts with her meeting Ava, the young girl. And if you remember, at the end of, I think, 2 weeks ago, Dr. Emery Carr gave Ava Omega's old Tuga doll, the one that Omega had made when she was locked up on Tantus. And it's really touching to see Omega there sitting next to this girl who's playing with her old doll, right? And how kind Omega is. She even compliments Ava on her doll. And she knows full well that you know, who, like, she made the doll, right? It's just a nice little moment, and then she starts to meet the rest of the kids, Jax and Sammy and Bairn. Do we talk about, I don't think we did, I was wrong about the toddler's name two weeks ago. It's Bairn, not Ailish. It's Bairn. Ailish is the mom. Bairn is the son, the toddler.
I think you can be neither here nor there catching that.
Yeah.
It's a little hard to tell. And we also get the name for the Pantoran that we didn't, it wasn't named in Identity Crisis. Yep. And that's Sammy. So, I don't know. What do you guys think of this whole sequence with Omega and the kids?
I mean, it just makes you continue to feel bad for them. Not that you didn't before, mm-hmm. but boy, it sucks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like they have no options. They are genuinely just kind of stuck there, and it is nice and maybe a mistake that they've allowed Omega in, who is much more plotty. Like she's constantly looking for the edge to figure out how they can get out, how can they escape, and we'll see. We'll see how it goes, I guess.
And Dr. Skaldr is actually very, I don't like to agree with the Empire, but she's correct in how she disagrees. does not approve of Omega being introduced into the vault, and she's not wrong.
No, she's not. Yeah. And I think Dr. Skaldr with Dr. Emery, when you watch the two of them together, complete opposites. And you could tell Skaldr is like, well, I'm going to have to keep an eye on Emery, or how did she get that position over me? You could tell that there's going to be a point between the two of them that they're going to go head to head.
Yeah. It's that classic Imperial, you know, jockeying for position.
Mm-hmm. A lot of inner office politics.
Yes.
So we're starting to see a little of, you know, Dr. Skaldr pushing back and disapproving. While we see, again, multiple times we see, you know, the specimens being, you know, the blood samples being taken from Omega and the other kids, and we learn that there is a special series of tubes of some sort hidden behind a hatch in a wall, or at least, you know, the cell walls look, they have like these like little plates on them, and they look like they're just immovable, but apparently one of them comes off and there's something behind that they put the samples in. And Omega thinks that maybe she can use these, pry one of them off the tubes off the walls to escape. And so she steals a knife and actually manages to pry off one of the panels. I don't know how and why the Empire would allow that to, seems like a huge security breach.
It's complicated, but here's an interesting question I have to ask. She took that knife, if I remember correct, from Emery's kit.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Wouldn't Emery have noticed it was missing?
I would think so. And I assume it's Emery's fine with it.
I was going to ask that. Do you think she's not necessarily helping, but allowing Omega to escape or do things?
I think that's an interesting question about the allowing her to escape. Although I really like how Omega did tell the kids she's escaped once before and she's going to do it again. So she's giving the kids hope. And knowing Omega, regardless, even though it seems like, I think there's a couple shots in which you could tell time has passed, that she's supposedly is quote unquote beaten down, Omega still has that spunk in her. She's going to get out of there regardless. Mm-hmm. Okay. But that's the thing. When that knife was taken, it's like, Emery would have known.
Maybe she's doing it intentionally.
Yeah.
I like that theory, Steven.
It's hard to tell with Emery, but that is definitely like the read it gave me. So there's so many ways. Like we're moving into the end game. And it makes it tricky to know, you know, what's going to happen next.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. Switching gears to the Bad Batch, is that Bespin? It kind of looks like Bespin, right? Am I crazy?
I thought it was Bespin.
Okay.
Yeah.
We're recording these before the episode guides are out, so we're just theorizing here. Everything we notice is based on, you know, what we catch and maybe our theories. So maybe it'll turn out it's not Bespin, but it certainly looked like Bespin to me. Maybe a slightly different style of floating city. You know, I don't think they're on Cloud City necessarily, but maybe they're somewhere else on the planet.
I'll be so curious to see it in the episode guide. I'm assuming Bespin was not in a great state before Lando shows up.
It could be,
and it's one of those kinds of things where he wins Cloud City in a game of Sabacc, and then kind of turns it around, and you know, does what the things that Lando does.
Renovation project,
slightly more beat up.
Yeah,
there you go.
Well, we know how he kept his Millennium Falcon. There's no way he's going to have a whole city that he owns be in poor condition. So
exactly, you know,
it's on brand. yeah. So okay. So I'm glad I'm not crazy. But
you are, but not for
that's true. Not in this one case. That's true. so they're on Bespin. It seems like Fee has departed them. We don't really get much of an explanation. I think Rampart or someone makes a comment about a pirate abandoning them. Don't really know what happened to her. I think given this episode, it's pretty clear. I think as we go into the finale, it's just going to be them. It's going to be just the batch.
Oh, yeah. I think it's going to be the batch.
My read is, you know, as we'll find out, they're going to end up going to Coruscant, and that is not the type of place that Fee is going to want to go. And it doesn't make sense for her to either.
Mm-hmm. And like we talked about last week with the focus narrowing, right, and getting smaller, I think it's just going to be the batch at this point. It's the batch with Echo and Rampart. Mm-hmm. They're heading to Tantus, and anyone who's on Tantus is already there. Great. I don't think we're seeing anybody else new, any other characters coming back. I think this is it as we rush into the finale. Mm-hmm. But that's okay. You know, I think she served her purpose. She helped them get here. We've seen a lot of great cameos this season so far, so I'm okay. All right, I have to focus and make it more personal, more focused for the finale. So. It makes sense.
Yeah.
But we finally get the answer to before we get to the answer, real quick, I do love seeing Echo again. I mentioned him just a minute ago, but he's back. He's got a shuttle that he stole, so they can, you know, return to the Jedi style, do whatever it is they're about to do. I do love seeing him call Rampart a Hydra snake, which is pretty great as well. So
there's quite a few Echo slams on Rampart in this episode.
Oh man, he's so good. So Steven, tell us about Rampart's plan.
Yeah, I mean, so what we've learned here is that there's the only way to get to Tantus is to dock at a very specific station above Coruscant.
Station 003.
Yes. And then the coordinates are downloaded into the Nava computer as the ships are leaving to go to Tantus. And so Rampart's plan, very easy, is they will sneak onto the station and they will steal the coordinates. Although it doesn't quite go to plan, as they'll discover the coordinates aren't on the station either. They're downloaded moments before the ships make their jump to hyperspace. So the gap there is the window is very, very small.
And you have to physically be on the ship at that point, right as it's taking off. Not a lot wiggle room.
I think it's physically on the ship as you're heading out toward your hyperspace jump point, and then you get that signal. So there really is no delay to where anybody can intercept it. You almost want to say it's instantaneous.
Yep.
Right before you make that jump. It's timed perfectly to where as soon as you get the coordinates, you're in hyperspace heading to Tantus.
Yeah. Yep. But it still sets up this great moment where, of course, they don't know this yet, right? And so the batch have to go and I think either way they would have had to do this, right? They have to infiltrate station 003. And to do so, they decide to pose as Rampart's security detail, and they make Rampart play the role of a... captain, right? They make him wear a captain's uniform, which, you know, does not play well with Rampart's ego.
How dare you?
Yeah. One of my best lines in the whole series comes from this, where Rampart's like, I can't wear this. It's a captain's uniform. I'm a vice admiral.
Well, the best part was the delay, right? Where he says it's a captain's uniform and there's like blank stares from the batch.
Yes.
And they're like, okay, yes. Your problem is.
I know.
And then he's like, I was a vice admiral. and then later, right, when he's like, I beg your pardon, I didn't make it to Vice Admiral on looks alone. His dialogue is fantastic in this episode.
I didn't remember Rampart being quite so sassy in previous. Yeah, but maybe that's because he was on top, you know, at the time. But just phenomenal in this episode.
Yeah.
And that's why when it came to, like I said, I would love to have seen like I said, previous episodes, Ahsoka show up or another one show up. This one was so unexpected, but because of this interaction between the clones and the Bad Batch and everybody, it works.
Yeah, it is perfect.
Yeah,
it is so perfect. And they're bringing back a former character from the series, big character from first season and a half. So it makes a lot of sense. His dialogue is great. Even like Crosshair, right? Telling him, the Empire prison tortured you, turned on you in prison. You remember that before you betray us is good. I guess later, right? When they start infiltrating and he's getting back into the groove of, bossing people around Imperial style. And Rampart's like, I've missed this. It's so good. The writing in this episode is just 10 out of 10.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Very well.
Easily.
Done. Yeah.
Yeah.
So Tom, I know you're a big fan of the clone and stormtrooper armor. The Batch, they make some big changes to their armor in this episode.
They kind of made it dull, if I remember correct, and they made them look more, I want to say stealthy a bit. Because they kind of
back to their original armor, right? Like before customized it, now they're just matte black all the way across, or matte gray, but
I don't think they were that gray though. I think they were darker in this case.
Yeah, they really like strip all of the customizations from their armor. Part of me wonders, their armor is still so unique and so different. Every single one of them has a different style of armor too, because they're different like sizes and expertise and whatnot. That in some ways, I feel like they would still stick out quite a bit compared to your average trooper. But then again, as I was thinking about this more before we recorded, there are so many variants of stormtrooper or clone trooper armor at this point. There's different phases, different special versions. I don't know if anyone knows every single variant, so maybe it doesn't really matter, right?
Well, I don't think it matters, but also realize, I think at this point, there's more of the quote-unquote stormtroopers that are now becoming part of the Empire. They're not going to be so up to date on what a clone, what a commando, what a Bad Batch armor is going to look like.
That's fair. That's fair. Steven, do you something?
I was going to say,
Steven, I didn't want to cut you off.
You've got Rampart, who's also I am here on order of General Tarkin. Do you want me to call Tarkin? Do you want me to call my boss? Clearly, these are special troopers on a top secret project. So their armor is a little bit different. That just makes sense.
Oh, he's so good. Rampart just playing the stuck up, captain or admiral or whatever rank he's pretending he is. Is just so good. It's so good. He leaves, eventually Lieutenant Novitz starts to wonder what's going on and notices an inconsistency, and that's when he knocks out, or Wrecker knocks him out when he is asked to verify the vessel's signature key. But it works well. It gets them right into the base, right? They get all the way into the control room just fine. Until they discover that, as we talked about earlier, there is no way to get the codes from here. The only way is to be physically on the ship. And so Echo volunteers to sneak aboard the science vessel and disable the proximity sensors. I guess apparently the ship can't see the Bad Batch's vessel approaching, or if they do, maybe they don't care, but they're more worried about attaching onto the ship And mm-hmm. and that's what Echo has to disable. So he sneaks aboard, and it creates this wonderful sequence with so much tension. And I don't know, Steven, as again, our resident ship expert, what did you think of this entire
there's a little bit of a believability issue of like, I get why, you know, you'd want to disable these kind of close in collision sensors so that they don't realize that the ship is, you know, impacted. You would still, I assume, have sensors that detect that the ship is approaching, and you would kind of assume that something has happened. But they just kind of skip past that side of things, which, you know, what it's questionable, but mm-hmm. you can't deny that the tension works of like, mm-hmm. oh, it's going to be close. We've already missed this once when, you know, Crosshair is delayed and can't make his shot in what, two, three episodes back, but they make it this time. It works. Mm-hmm. They latch on just as the ship jumps out.
Yeah. I mean, Echo disables the sensors half a second before the Bad Batch ship attaches, and then that's half a second before the ship jumps into hyperspace. It's boom, 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 very fast in sequence. But the tension is—it's really well done. Yeah, I was like on the edge of my seat. Like, are they gonna make it? We all know they're gonna make it, right? But it was well done. I don't know, Tom, what'd you think?
But it also left that bit of a doubt because Steven, you did touch on it when Crosshair was trying to put that tracker originally. He missed. And it was just that split second to where right when it was probably going to engage, that's when the Imperial ship took off. And you thought the exact same thing was going to happen this time. They were just going to make it. And then in that last instant, boom, straight into hyperspace. So, yep. And also when it comes to possibly, you know, not knowing they're being trailed, this is the Empire. To a certain extent, they could just be arrogant enough to feel that nobody's going to trail them. Especially if they're around Coruscant. Who's going to trail this medical ship going somewhere, even though you are a special ship? So that's probably why the proximity sensors basically are so tight onto the ship, because nobody's really going to be that close to a ship leaving for hyperspace. So,
yeah, well, it works, you know, they're able to escape, and they're, you know, I initially thought they were just going to board the ship. But the fact that they actually attached their ship to the larger science vessel was really interesting, and kind of piggyback ride all the way to Tantus with Echo on the science vessel, but the rest of the batch attached Millennium Falcon style.
Yeah. And I think that would have been hard to have them all jump onto the ship. It would have been easier for one to get on and sneak around than the whole batch. And then Rampart. I mean, do you seriously think you're going to put Rampart on a ship like that? He would probably try and take over that ship before it even got to Tantus.
You're so true. That's so right.
Yeah.
Oh, yes. But yeah, that is Into the Breach. I loved this episode. It was so good. Mm-hmm. It was the writing. It was the character development. Again, it just kind of, it flows so well from one scene to another that you're like, wow, it's already over, right? I wish there was more of this. It's just really well done. I don't know. Any other thoughts on this episode?
No, I'm good.
Yeah, I think we covered it.
Let's dive in then. I guess I'll start. I loved, again, the writing in this episode. Really great. And just Rampart is... His introduction last week was really good. And this was even better, just as far as his characterization goes. So... I'm going to have to give this a 9 out of 10. Again, just really wonderful writing. And he just chews up every scene he's in. He's fantastic. And the batch, they figured out a great way to locate Tantus and they're off. So yeah, 9 Womp Rats out of 10. And my 9 Womp Rats, I think they're aboard the science vessel. The science vessel is actually carrying 9 Womp Rats. Tantus for testing purposes. Steven?
I think I'm gonna give this one an 8 out of 10. Maybe I'll give it an 8.5. That extra half just comes purely out of Echo and Rampart having their banter back and forth. I'm glad, like, when we talked about, you know, I think it was Point of No Return, which is, you know, when Omega gets taken, I was a little nervous we were going to spend a bunch of time trying to find our way back to Tantus again. And I thought this episode did a great job of both understanding why it was difficult to do in the first place, but also having it happen relatively quickly. And yeah, I mean, this is the setup episode, I think, for the final episodes of the season. Like, everyone is now where they need to be. We've got Echo back as, you know, a recurring character for the finales, it seems like. So I'm on board. So yeah, 8.5 out of 10. And, you know, I mentioned earlier, there's some confusion around why, you know, the ship being leaving for Tantus wouldn't notice the shuttle on sensors. But it turns out there were actually Womp Rats running the sensors for the science vessel, and it didn't, you know. There were some training issues involved. You know, they didn't read the manual front to back. So that explained that part of the issue. Pure luck on, you know, the part of the batch. But yeah, you know, sometimes luck is what you need.
That makes complete sense. Of course. Why didn't I realize that? Tom.
William, I'm going to agree with you. I'm giving this one a 9. I thought this was a great episode. The best part about this episode for me was the tension toward the end that was built up to where, are they going to make it? Are they not going to make it? And also, I thought the way that they put the story together of how the coordinates got to the ship, the reasoning on how they were going to get them, I just thought it was wonderfully written episode. So it's a 9 across the board. My 9 Womp Rats. William, you kind of took my idea, because I was going to have them be part of the experiments that are going to Tantus. So I don't know if yours are running around the ship, but 9 are actually in little cocoons or whatever, because they're going to be experimented on, because little do they know that if you take all 9 Womp Rats and put them together, they would have a very, very, very high M count that may be higher than Omega. That's why they're taking them to Tantus, to see if that is going to be the case.
Honestly, that makes sense. That makes sense.
Now, the biggest problem is, can that Womp Rat M count translate into human form? The world will never know. May never know. I don't know. So anyway.
Yeah. Well, this was a fun episode. I wish we could, there's lots more, of course, we could talk about next week when we get to Flash Strike, the penultimate episode of The Bad Batch. This is the last one before the finale, so get ready. I have a feeling it will be, you know, it's ramping up, right? It's ramping up, ramparting up? No. I am very excited to see what happens next week. In the meantime, thank you all for listening, and we'll be back next week with our review of Flash Strike.
Thank you for listening to the Ion Cannon Podcast, your source for entertainment reviews from a galaxy far, far away. For over a decade, Ion Cannon has covered every corner of the saga, from the films and animated series like The Clone Wars and Rebels, to books, comics, games, and more. If you like what you hear, please rate us in your favorite podcast client. Your review will help this show grow within the Star Wars community. We can be found at our website, ioncannoncast.com, and you can follow us through Facebook and Twitter. To email us, you can do so at contact@ioncannoncast.com. The Ion Cannon Podcast is not associated with Lucasfilm, the Walt Disney Company, or any and all of their respective trademarks or copyright holders. Any opinion expressed on the show are that of the hosts. This podcast is a production by fans, for fans, and is copyright 2018.